need you here on my mind every hour of the day. Without your sweet inspiration, good evening. It's Tuesday night at 7 p.m. on the West Coast. And that means, of course, that it's time for the Tammy Jackson Show on the 405. This is Tammy Jackson welcoming you to 60 minutes of sweet conservative inspiration. If you'd like to do so, you can interact with comments and or questions on Twitter. I try to keep an eye on Twitter. I do a fairly good job on that, and I read tweets during the show. Use the hashtag if you want, #TJRS, and of course, follow me at Tammy J, T-A-M-I-J, pretty darn simple. My first guest tonight is Captain Roger Hill. Captain Roger Hill is a West Point graduate, combat veteran, and Bronze Star recipient who had dreamed of being a soldier since he was 6 years old. In 2007, Hill took command of Dog Company, an 89-man unit of the famed 101st Airborne. The unit was a rough and tumble, full of rough and tumble men who were brilliant in combat but undisciplined at home. Through tough love, Hill and his first sergeant, an old school former drill instructor named Tommy Scott, they turned the company into top performers in the battalion. Nowadays, Roger Hill is an advocate for military veterans and first responders, and he serves as director of operations at Body Worn, a producer of police body cameras in Atlanta, Georgia. He's also the co-author of a new stunning book, Dog Company, a true story of American soldiers abandoned by their high command. And as usual, before I get going here, the book is linked to its Amazon page by title and by the book cover image. So after the show is over, after everybody's done talking, go straight to Amazon, buy several copies. You'll want one for yourself and one for all your friends, because seriously, folks, this book affected me as much mentally and emotionally as Marcus Luttrell's Lone Survivor. It is that good. It's phenomenal. Captain Roger Hill, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tammy. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. I like to ask everybody that is former military that's on the show, and I have a lot of friends that are in the military, have been in the military, special forces, regular forces, you name it. I tend to be kind of a fan of our military and our vets and retired folks. I just love them to pieces. And I always wonder what... you know, what it is that triggers them into wanting to join the military. And I know there's something about that in Chapter 5, talks about your father, he was retired Army, etc. But what was it precisely that made you want to join the military?
Gosh, I have to kind of point to my faith a little bit. I think it's the scripture that goes something to the effect of, you know, there's no greater love than a man that be willing to lay down his life for another.
And, yes.
I remember being very young and hearing that scripture and somehow being able to tie that to sort of the warrior code of sacrifice in uniform, and it just being a source of inspiration in that way. So, I don't know how to explain it exactly, but just I remember that hitting my heart at a very young age and that translating into wanting to serve in the military on behalf of others.
Well, and it's funny you should mention that, because I asked you for a picture for my Pinterest page that's dedicated to troops and vets, and at the top of the page I have that very Bible verse, because I do have a lot of people on that page, and some of whom paid, as Lincoln said, the last full measure of devotion. Every time I'd get a picture, and I got them all from those that served themselves, or if they were KIA, I received them from next of kin, and hearing the stories, it just choked me up to no end. I just the sacrifice. It was pretty amazing. in, as I alluded to, and people need to know this, so in Dog Company, A True Story of American Soldiers Abandoned by Their High Command, in Chapter 5, you note that your father was retired Army, and your Korean-born mother was what you call a tiger mom. That's, I've heard that phrase before, but it's a mother that raises her children in that traditional Chinese way, which is very strict with tough love and discipline. I would say my mom was a tiger mom, except she was Norwegian. So,
yeah. No, that's fair.
Where?
Yeah,
go ahead.
No, I was just say, I am half Korean, half Alabamian with a sprinkle of Cherokee, Native American Indian, I like to say. But yeah, my mom was tough growing up, but it paid off, I think, in the long run.
I think it does pay off. And I think some of the things that I've heard attributed to you about the snowflake culture and so forth today, when you have kids that are babied by parents, where their chief goal seems to be to give the little prince or princess self-esteem, to me, that kind of backfires, don't you think?
Yeah, there's a certain level of stress that's very healthy, and you know, parents can be a healthy part of providing the sorts of stress, you know, in good ways that help us to become healthy and vibrant adults, so that we can deal with real challenges in life. When we become adults, we don't, you know, fall apart or melt, as you would like to say, when life throws us those challenges. But yeah, certainly.
Yeah. So your father was retired Army. Did he serve in active combat, or was he in between conflicts, or?
Yeah, so he grew up right at joined right at the tail end of Vietnam. He did spend the first part of his career as an infantryman, but mostly in peacetime, and then he transitioned to a different, what they call MOS. It's the specialty under which you serve. And
right,
he was an engineer, and he spent a year in Afghanistan, and he helped build a lot of the bases that, you know, a lot of the guys and girls were on later on in Afghanistan.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. And okay, so here's a quick question, because I asked a previous guest who is an interesting guy. If you know the editorial cartoonist Michael Ramirez, who's one of my favorites in the world, and he's become a friend and been on the show, and people always wonder, they look at him and say, what in the world is your nationality? Well, what they didn't know was his father was Hispanic, but his mother was Japanese, and they met when his father was in the service and stationed in Japan. And so I got him on air to tell that love story. It was very interesting. But I'm curious, how did your mom and dad meet? Was your mom already here in America? I know that you noted that your two uncles came over here with not much money in their pockets, but I didn't know how your mom got here.
Yeah, so same kind of thing as with lots of military families. My dad was stationed in Korea as his first assignment in the military or the Army, and my mom was a secretary on a joint Korean / U.S. Army base, and she worked for some, you know, Korean military officer or senior enlisted, and somehow they bumped into each other through work, and the rest is history.
Wow. Okay, that's pretty darn interesting. You attended West Point. That's pretty tough, isn't it, Roger Hill?
It was tough. I wanted to quit many times when I was there, but it just wasn't in my DNA given my upbringing. But it was a tough go. I can't say that I really look back on my time at the Academy with fondness, because it was just one challenge after another, but it's kind of a bittersweet, right?
Yeah.
It's equipped me with a lot of good qualities and characteristics that have helped me a lot in life.
Well, I know that it makes note in the book that you were an academic achiever and did really well. But I would tell you, I think that's like a lot of us and a lot of young people I know that are bright and excel in school, but it doesn't always prepare them for the rigors of academia at the next level, and especially an institution like West Point. And I read that and I kind of chuckled, and I thought, isn't it amazing that you get thrown into something like that? And I understand how tough that can be. In chapter 5, there's some really good background, and it's talking about you and Tommy Scott, your first sergeant. I'll just read this quickly. Doctrinally, officers and NCOs are taught that the mission comes first and soldiers second. Hill got that. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts. In the heat of battle, though, with bullets snapping at their heads, when rockets sear across their backs, when men throw themselves on top of live grenades, when they carry bleeding brothers through live fire, most are not doing it for the mission, for democracy, or even for their country. They are doing it for each other. An infantryman fights for the man next to him, who fights for the man next to him, which was why Hill and Scott emphasized soldiers first. Both had found if they took care of the soldiers well enough, soldiers would take care of the mission. That's great stuff, Roger Hill.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, the Army, I guess the military at large, is really well known for, you know, sort of that emphasis on mission first, you know, getting the job done first. But I just kind of came to a different conclusion, you know, at some point in my career, and Tommy Scott obviously had already been there, but he had a number of years on me, and that was a great thing for us to have in common. It really allowed us to forge a very strong bond as a command team, and it allowed us to work very closely to one another, because having that similar worldview, that similar perspective in terms of leadership, really helped us, just work closely with one another.
Yes. Now, the book, Dog Company, A True Story of American Soldiers Abandoned by Their High Command, it begins with this author's note. What you hold in your hands is a book the government does not want you to read. The Pentagon does not want you to read about its catch and release detention system that allows the same enemy fighters to ambush, bomb, and shoot American sons and daughters over and over again. Now, Roger Hill, your co-author Lynn Vincent served 8 years in the Navy and held a secret security clearance when on active duty, and you served 10 years in the Army and held a top secret clearance. Will you explain what you meant, why you think the government doesn't want us to read it, or pretty much know that they don't, and tell the story of why you had to submit the manuscript to DOD's Office of Security Review and what happened?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Thanks for mentioning Lynn, too. Wow, just a true patriot. She's her second book, Turn the Movie, comes out this spring, and as you mentioned, she's a Navy veteran of 8 years. We could not have gotten this book across the finish line without her steadfastness and follow through.
Fantastic.
We know that the government doesn't want the American public to read this book, because as you can see, as you flip through it, there are a number of redactions, and
yes,
90% of the redactions in the book, and there are a handful, however, they're, as you can attest to, they're not difficult to read around, fortunately. Once you read through some of those redactions, you kind of pick up a pattern and are able to sort of fill in the blanks, at least generically speaking. But the 90% of the redactions that are in that book, we, through the aid of a couple of different law firms who specialize in intelligence and counterintelligence, type information, and through a subject matter expert that the government regularly hires to teach its own intelligence community about that sort of subject matter, all agreed that 90% of those redactions were already available, the information already available on federally funded websites, like as in today, as in right now. But still the government wanted to redact some of these things. And then the other thing was that 2/3 of those redactions were centered around what's known as by a lot of troops and Marines overseas as the catch and release or revolving door detainee policies of Afghanistan and Iraq, where we have so many times captured enemy combatants or spies on the battlefield to only receive pressure to turn around and release them and put them back on the battlefield, back into circulation to fight us again. So those are kind of the biggest ones right there.
Yeah. Yeah, I was kind of horrified, and as I've told people, and I mentioned it in the show page, I have been very upset about rules of engagement ever since reading Marcus Luttrell's Lone Survivor, at which point I was so angry and saddened. At one point I was riding the stationary bike and crying as I read what was going down, and what because I have enough friends in the military, and I have a lot of former Navy SEAL friends, it's interesting because I've come to realize that those rules of engagement are often put in place by political people in Washington, D.C. that have never been downrange. They've never been in the sandbox. They have no idea what it means. And they have no idea that you train and train and train so that you cut seconds off your response time, so that it's just an immediate response. You know how to respond to the threat. But when you throw in rules of of engagement that are created and crafted by political people in D.C. that are politically correct, what that does is inserts more and more and more time into your reaction time and whatever else is going on, so that it is endangering our people, and seconds can mean lives. So as I was reading your book, I already had that foundation, and it hit me hard. It really did, Roger Hill. The book is tremendous. We're going to get into some specifics of the book. What really started things off? An IED that detonated and killed two people in his unit after a lot of people were wounded previously. It's pretty harrowing, and you read about it early on and just are stunned by what they lived through. I'll be back with Roger Hill talking about his new book, Dog Company, A True Story of American Soldiers Abandoned by Their High Command. The Tammy Jackson Show is sponsored by Robar Guns, a true custom firearms and firearms finishing shop located in Phoenix, Arizona. They're found online at robarguns.com. They can give your worn-out firearm new life. Try it. Just send it to them. You will not believe what they're able to do at their shop. They've got the real deal as far as gunsmiths go. But also, as I tell you every week, they've got some beautiful custom firearms, including, and I may have mentioned this one before, but I love this rifle. It's the SR-21 rifle. That stands for Sniper Rifle 21st Century. And yeah, I had the opportunity to visit Phoenix and head out to the Ben Avery Range outside of Phoenix one morning and shoot this beauty. Let me tell you, it was a Robar SR-21 308 with loopholed optics and an aim point micro T1. I took a picture of the rifle and noted online that I was living proof a gal could fall in love with a rifle. So whatever you need to give your worn firearm new life, or if you want a new custom pistol or rifle, you absolutely have to check out robarguns.com, sponsor of the Tammy Jackson Show.
You're on the 405.
Shop Amazon, support the 405 Media. Click on the banner on top of our homepage. Then you know what to do. The 405 Media is an Amazon associate. That means you get great deals on Amazon.com and support the Talk Alternative at no extra charge. We are the 405media.com. Thank you. Gang of 405, live on the 405media.com. Join John Grant on the West Coast, Tammy Jackson in Oregon, and Scott Jones in Texas.
There was a kid who set a fire in the middle of the street, and he asked him why he did, and he said because he felt like it, and then looked in the camera and said, screw the president.
That kid needs a whooping.
Why in the wide, wide world of sports do you let your kid run off down the street and start fires?
Because where's the parents and bad parenting,
yeah,
and it turns
exactly
out that he drove Terry.
Well, his dad was down the street emceeing an inaugural event. Oh. Well, Drew Carey is a Gary Johnson guy, so you can bet your patootie that around the Drew Carey house, there was a lot of nasty things said about Donald Trump.
The kid needs an ass whooping, and he needs one yesterday.
Spare the rod and spoil the libertarian, I always say. The original and classic Gang of 405. Saturday mornings, live, 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern, only on the 405media.com.
You're on the 405.
Let's talk tech. Tech news discussions from the people in the industry right here in Pittsburgh. Online, gadgets, startups, and more. Check it out at awesomecast.net.
AwesomeCast. It's all about tech, and it's all about gadgets. It's AwesomeCast, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the 405media.com.
You're on the 405.
We are a bold and active voice for the unborn. We are Audio Girl Ministries, saving the lives of babies by helping moms in crisis pregnancies get past the crisis. How? Free ultrasound imaging so the woman can see the life she's carrying, and by supplying her with essential baby items, diapers, clothes, food, crib, car seat, all given with a loving and caring heart. Want to help? Log on to audiogirlministries.com and make a tax-deductible donation. audiogirlministries.com. Thanks.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo.
This is Tammy Jackson, and I'm joined by my guest, Captain Roger Hill. We're talking about his new book, Dog Company, A True Story of American Soldiers Abandoned by Their High Command. And it is co-written by, the name right here, Lynn Vincent, who is also a veteran. And between the two of them, let me tell you, they tell a great story, and it's a true story. And it's pretty amazing. I told Roger during the break, I wanted to read just a little something from page 15. I want y'all to understand, as you're reading this book, it's not just like a diary of military happenings and events. This is a real, it's a true life story, but it reads like you're in a movie. It is that good. And he brings everybody in it to life so that we learn to care about these people too. And we understand Roger Hill, Captain Hill's affection for his men and his unit and so forth. On page 15, he writes about Mo. It's Sergeant First Class Tim Mo Moriarty. And two guys have just died, and Mo knelt near Conlon and Carwile and laid a hand on each man's head. Other soldiers saw what he was doing, gathered in a hushed circle, knelt and bowed their heads. As the first medevac helo thumped over the horizon, Mo began to pray. Dear Lord, please take these fallen warriors and keep them. Be with their families now as they are about to face the most difficult time of their lives. One night during the initial invasion of Iraq, Mo's unit lost three men. The mother of one soldier later grieved in a blog post that her son had died alone in a dark, lonely place with no one to pray for him. Since that day, Mo prayed for the fallen whenever he could, but he believed that mother's boy had not been alone, that God was everywhere, even in the hell of a battlefield, and that he could be seen in the actions of men. I just thought that was good, and it just shows a snippet of something going on there downrange, what your men were going through.
Yeah, wow, you're bringing back a lot of memories. I'm just kind of got stuck in time and space there.
Hanging on
you reading. To your point, and this, a lot of this credit goes to Lynn, this type of and style of writing, you know, as I mentioned earlier, this spring, she's going to have her second book turned a movie, hit the big screen, and she does write in that way. So, we're hopeful for that, you know, for Dark Company, not just because of the notoriety that I think the men in this story and all men and women in uniform deserve, but there's a very special message that needs to get out about rules of engagement. But to your question or to your comment, people will fall in love with the characters in this book because there is such an intimate relationship developed with them, and that comes through hours and hours of interviews and research into their backgrounds and learning these small nuggets about what makes them who they are, you know, things from their childhood, things from previous experiences, like Mo's previous experience from Desert Storm. And there's just such a richness in the development of these characters. It truly is sort of that cross between Band of Brothers and the courtroom drama of A Few Good Men. I think folks will really enjoy it, because of that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'm sure that they will enjoy it. In fact, now, in the book, you talk about your wife and one of the fellows that died, and your wife and that fellow's wife had become best friends, and you were thinking about, oh my goodness, his wife Jennifer and her loss that she was about to find out about, and your wife Lauren, and Lauren was the head of Dog Company Family Readiness Group. Tell us what that involved, what Lauren did, because I think this is very powerful.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate you highlighting that. It's a big deal. I mean, these guys and girls are going overseas, those in uniform, you know, 4, 5, 6 times, you know, we're sending the same people over and over again. But in the moment, they know what mission they're on. They know what operation they're up against. They kind of know what they're heading into. But these families live with months and years of uncertainty at a time. And, you know, here you've got in this chapter one of many instances where Lauren, you know, my wife and at the time and head of the family readiness group basically carried, I think the terminology we used was the war in her purse, which was a phone that was specially designated for call downs. And we took so many wounded, you know, and a handful of killed, that she was constantly being called and given details of what was going on so that she could then make call outs to family members and next of kin to kind of give them a heads up on what was going on. And this is very common in this day and age. You know, we have this expectation to stay interconnected in such a highly responsive way. And so as a part of that expectation, you know, our families, when we're overseas, especially those that are in, you know, husbands or wives of those that are in leadership, like myself, they're constantly having to deal with this trauma on a regular basis. I thought we did a really good job sort of depicting that in the story.
Yes, because the sacrifices are made downrange on the battlefields, and they're also made at home by these families that are worried about and praying about their loved ones every day, and we need to just do everything we can to support them. What happens early on in the story is there's an IED that hits a convoy, and two guys are killed, and as a result of that, you did a lot of investigation and found that what you called what was the term, the local nationals that helped you all, that were supposedly helping you, were actually giving up information to the Taliban. And one thing that came to mind is that the Muslims believe in Taqiyya or Taqiyya, which means lying for the sake of their religion or the caliphate. And I think that that kind of plays into it. But you found out that you really were at odds with the military and the rules of engagement versus taking care of your men. What I want to know, I don't want to give the story away. I want everybody to buy this and read it because I think they'll be sucked in. There's some great reviews of the book at the Amazon page. One of them says, and I'm going to read this quickly, it's a soldier from the 506th Infantry. He says, I had the privilege and honor to work under Captain Hill and First Scott on FOB Airborne. I'm glad the truth is out. This book tells everything that happened on FOB Airborne. I will never forget these two great leaders. And another person writes, I am 10 chapters in, I cannot put this book down. I have never been so angry and so proud at the same time. These boys are true American heroes. I felt the same way. I was angry. I was crying. I was reading this. I could not believe it. As we're closing here, Captain Roger Hill, and now you're just Roger Hill, I guess, in the civilian capacity. But yeah. do you think there's hope for the military and the DOD with President Trump? Are you happy with some of the people he's putting in place?
I am, yeah. You know, just real quickly to your earlier point, Dog Company illustrates in dramatic fashion what happens when we allow for politically driven rules of engagement to infect our military. And it's in what happens and how it affects our troops overseas in combat. And things have gotten really bad over the last 8 to 10 years. We've not rooted out a lot of that progressive mindset that's unfortunately infected our military. And so I think the next administration has a pretty hefty task ahead of them. A lot of those leaders that the past that have been allowed into the military over the last 8 to 10 years are still there. And I am very hopeful that there will be change. I think, you know, we've got the best military in the world, but we're only as good as we allow ourselves to be. And the first thing that our country needs to do before it even considers looking at another theater of conflict like a Syria or North Korea or wherever else is we've got to untie our hands from behind our backs and support our men and women downrange when we send them in to do our dirty work.
Yeah, absolutely. I say, you know, give them the tools they need, train them well, let them loose to accomplish the mission and get home safe. And I really don't know, want to know what they have to do. They're trained to do what they need to do and let them do it. Wow, the time has gone so fast. Captain Roger Hill, thank you for your service. God bless you and for taking time to be on the show tonight. I can't thank you enough.
Thank you, Tammy. It's been a real honor, and thanks for what you and your team do to, you know, to just, there's a lot of work ahead of us to turn this country around, and I know folks like you are just digging in every day and getting it done, and I really appreciate that.
Well, it's, you know, all of us serve as we can with whatever few gifts we've Amen. Been given, so
Amen.
We just keep working together, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Okay, Thank you. Take care, my friend.
Yes, ma'am.
You're listening to the Tammy Jackson Show on the 405. I will be back on the other side of the break with legal counsel for Alliance Defending Freedoms, Christiana Holcomb. The Tammy Jackson Show is brought to you by Rent-A-Computer. An agent from rentacomputer.com can save your company time and money on your next short-term need for a computer, audiovisual, or office equipment rental. Rent-A-Computer.com delivers the rental hardware your event needs to your office, trade show booth, or event venue location anywhere in the United States or Canada. Their offerings include Apple iPads, iPhones, Microsoft Surface tablets, and more. If you're planning your next corporate event, remember, Rent-A-Computer.com provides a superior turnkey event rental service with one point of contact for clients both large and small. Visit rentacomputer.com or call them at 800-736-8772. That's rentacomputer.com, sponsor of the Tammy Jackson Show.
You're on the 405.
Shop Amazon, support the 405 Media. Click on the banner on top of our homepage. Then you know what to do. The 405 Media is an Amazon associate. That means you get great deals on Amazon.com and support the Talk Alternative at no extra charge. We are the 405media.com. Thank you. Pops Radio, short for Pissed Off, Politically Speaking, with Scott Jones on the 405media.com.
Brett Baer, thanks for joining us from Washington.
Hey, great to be here.
Tom Rogan, thanks for being with us.
Great to be with you, Scott. Thanks for having me on.
Cheryl Atkinson, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Is Washington just totally dysfunctional? I mean, to me, this is just unprecedented, Cheryl.
These ties are so deep now, and so at least giving the appearance of corruption, I think people have come to just kind of throw up their hands and distrust nearly every official establishment body.
And your words here on our air today should be horrifying, if not motivating, for anyone who's sitting on the fence about this.
Pissed Off, Politically Speaking, Monday, 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern, only on the 405media.com.
You're on the 405.
I love Tammy.
I love you back, Kurt, because I'm a caring kind of gal.
The Tammy Jackson Show.
I'm just one conservative gal encouraging you to keep fighting the good fight.
Tammy is what conservative insurgency is about.
Tammy Jackson, the granddaughter of legal immigrants.
In Honduras, they had 60,000 murders per 100,000, or something like that. And I thought, whoa, that is a lot.
Like every other person on the block is dead.
Tammy Jackson, the emerging threat from the West Coast.
Tammy has made herself into a rising radio star.
When we have these mass amounts just suddenly pour into the United States, we have a worse problem than we already have had with assimilation.
The Tammy Jackson Show, Tuesday nights, 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, only on the 405media.com.
Anything for you, Tammy.
You're on the 405.
This is Mike from the Wrestling Mayhem Show, the show where we get fans and people in the wrestling industry together to talk about pro wrestling, WWE, NXT, WrestleMania, all kinds of fun. It's a podcast party. Check it out, Wrestling Mayhem Show, right here on the 405 Media.
Listen to the Wrestling Mayhem Show, now 7 nights a week, 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, right here on the 405media.com.
You're on the 405.
Second, I need to get my story straight. My friends are in the bathroom getting higher than the
Welcome back. This is Tammy Jackson, and I'm a little over halfway through the show, and now joined by my guest, Christiana Holcomb. Is it Holcomb or Holcomb? How do you say it, Christiana?
It's Holcomb.
Holcomb. Okay, I've got to be more simple. Christiana Holcomb Esquire serves as legal counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom, where she's an invaluable member of the Center for Christian Ministries. Since joining ADF in 2012, Holcomb has worked to protect the freedom of churches, Christian schools, and Christian ministries to freely exercise their faith without government interference. Christiana will be Eric Stanley's deputy on the Trinity Lutheran Church of Columbia, Inc., the Poly, which is also known as the Playground case, the biggest case left on the SCOTUS docket, which will be heard on Wednesday, April 19. Christiana, I'm so thrilled that you are making the time to be on the show.
Tammy, thank you so much for having me.
This is pretty exciting, and I know you can't talk much about this, but I, as kind of a legalese junkie, I followed the Senate Judiciary Committee confirmation hearings of Neil Gorsuch, every minute of it. I guess I can ask you, did you watch those hearings at all?
You know, I popped in and out between my regular work, but it definitely was fascinating. And, you know, it has major implications for this religious liberty case, scrap tires and religious liberty, that's now at the Supreme Court.
Yes.
As you may remember, the Supreme Court granted cert last year, but refused to actually set the case for a hearing until when it appeared we would actually have Justice Scalia's old seat filled. So we're really excited to have that seat filled. We're glad to be presenting tomorrow at 10 o'clock before a full panel of the United States Supreme Court. So it's a really exciting development.
Well, it sure is. I was so saddened at the loss of Antonin Scalia. He was a national treasure. What a gem of a jurist. But Neil Gorsuch, in those hearings, I was impressed by his composure and his knowledge and gracious attitude in the face of some very combative questioning. I thought, okay, at least we know, and both sides of the aisle know that he's got judicial temperament in place.
No, you're so exactly right. And integrity as well. And
yes.
You know, from the reports that I'm hearing from the first few days, he's been on the bench since Monday. It sounds
yes.
like he really came out of the gate strong, asking some very intense lines of questioning. So we're really excited to see what he's going to do in the courtroom tomorrow when our own Alliance Defending Freedom attorneys are arguing this case before him.
Yes. Now, okay, let's talk about the case itself, the Trinity Lutheran Church of Columbia, Inc. v. Comer.
That's right.
Tell us about the case, would you? And how did Alliance Defending Freedom get involved?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is being referred to as the Playground case and has been called the remaining marquee case on the Supreme Court's docket this term. But really, it has to do with scrap tires and whether or not kids who go to religious preschools deserve a safe place to play, just like kids who go to other schools. Seems like a really straightforward question. Doesn't seem like it'd be controversial, but apparently it is in the state of Missouri. So here's what happened. Trinity Lutheran Church of Columbia wanted to make its preschool playground a safer place for kids. It has a pea gravel covering the surfacing is playground, and yeah, it's really jagged edges, uncomfortable for little knees and little elbows. So it applied to Missouri's state reimbursement grant program, whereby everybody who buys tires in the state of Missouri pays a tax on them. And that goes into this big pot, this big fund. And then nonprofits can apply and compete to receive grant reimbursement dollars to help purchase recycled scrap tires that have been made into this playground surfacing material. So hopefully that makes sense. But basically, it's an environmentally safe, friendly program. And then also just helps, again, to create a safe space for kiddos to play. So Trinity wanted to do that. And so it applied. Super competitive. There's like 16 criteria on the application. We're talking arduous here. Everything from a detailed installation plan to education about recycling to a media plan and so on and so forth. Trinity scored 5th out of 44 applicants. The state of Missouri came back to Trinity Lutheran and said, look, you would receive the grant and we would have given it to you, but you're a religious organization, and therefore we're going to exclude you from this safety program. And so here's Trinity Lutheran trying to, again, create a safe space for kids to play, but it's being excluded from this neutral government benefit, frankly, in violation of the United States Constitution. The Constitution does not allow government to treat religious people as second-class citizens. It doesn't allow their governments to discriminate against people of faith just because of their religious status. And that's really what we're going to be arguing to the Supreme Court tomorrow.
Well, it's so fascinating. And I was reading everything I could at the ADF website, and it talked about those, how there were 44 nonprofits, as you mentioned, and Trinity Lutheran's application ranked 5th, which is just amazing that they turned them down. And two other points I saw there on your website that caught my eye was the playground is used after hours and on weekends by children in the community. So it's not just children from the school. And over 90% of the children who attended the preschool at Trinity Lutheran don't even attend the church themselves. But beyond that, Christiana, tell me where I'm wrong in thinking this, but I know what the First Amendment says, and the First Amendment, there's the Establishment Clause. We know that government is not supposed to establish a state church, either an individual state church or a national government church. They're not supposed to do that, but this not only, it doesn't even come close to the establishment or respect of a religion at all. This is something that has to do with infrastructure. To me, it would be like getting a permit to plant trees around a church from the city or something like that. It's so much not having to do with that. I can't believe that they declined it.
I can't believe we're even having this conversation. You're exactly right. I mean, how much further from religion can you get than scrap tires? Like, we're talking about a kid's playground. We're not talking about funding clergy training or buying Bibles or anything like that. No, the state of Missouri is hiding behind its state constitution, but taking this notion of separation of church and state to such an extreme degree that it's actually violating the Free Exercise Clause and discriminating against religious organizations. Look, people of faith must be treated fairly and equally in the public square. They cannot be treated as second-class citizens by their government. And as you mentioned, look, you know who they're treating as second-class citizens or worse than everyone else? Preschool children from the community, most of which don't even attend the church. And to be frank, the community area in which this church resides is generally low income. So we've got children who may not have any other playground access or any other place in which to play that are utilizing this church space. And their own state government is saying, no, your safety is not as important to us as the safety of kids who play on preschool playgrounds owned by secular organizations. It's utterly ridiculous.
Go ahead.
Yeah, but to take the state of Missouri's logic even a step further, consider this. If our governments are allowed to deny religious organizations access to these neutral, generally available public benefits, then what's to stop them from denying a church, for example, or a Jewish school, access to fire police protection? Those are generally available neutral government benefits that, frankly, could be on the chopping block if the state of Missouri is allowed to continue with its pattern and practice.
Wow. I hadn't even thought of that, but that's absolutely right. That would be the ultimate conclusion of where we're going. It just seems that there are some people determined to expunge faith from the public square, from our nation at every turn. And I see this all the time, and I'm just appalled. I think, what is going on here in the nation? I want to talk about this a little bit after the break, but before we get to the break, we've got about a minute here. For those of us who have never witnessed a U.S. Supreme Court hearing, since there's no cameras in the courtroom, which is another ongoing debate, which is interesting, what happens when you get in there? It starts at 10 a.m., and what happens?
Yeah, so it starts at 10 a.m. The first thing that happens is something of a routine. We're going to be waving in attorneys who are going to get admitted to the Supreme Court bar, so that's exciting. But then the Chief Justice will call the attorneys from one side and then from the other side to come up and to make their case. And there will be, it won't take long, and there will be a volley of questions from the bench. And from there on out, the various advocates, including Alliance Defending Freedom's David Courtman, will be answering a barrage of questions, trying to answer the various concerns of the justices.
Wow. I do wish I was a fly on the wall for that, because I just think it would be so fascinating. The Tammy Jackson Show with my great guest, Christiana Holcomb, will wrap up the hour after the break. The Tammy Jackson Show is brought to you by Dispatch's website, found at johnbiver.com. Dispatch's is an absolute treasure trove of resources to inform and equip conservatives to fight and win the information war. That's Dispatch's at johnbiver.com, sponsor of The Tammy Jackson Show.
You're on the 405.
Shop Amazon, support the 405 Media. Click on the banner on top of our homepage. Then you know what to do. The 405 Media is an Amazon associate. That means you get great deals on Amazon.com and support the Talk Alternative at no extra charge. We are the 405media.com. Thank you.
The Gang of 405, live on the 405media.com. Join John Grant on the West Coast, Tammy Jackson in Oregon, and Scott Jones in Texas.
Broader America is hip to the game, and they're tired of it.
That is spot on. You guys probably remember, for instance, there was a homeschool Christian family from, was it Germany?
Germany.
That they wouldn't allow to come to the United States.
There's not a single Christian in the Jordanian camps for Syrian refugees.
It seems like the Democrats are hell-bent and will go to the mat to protect any foreigner, any immigrant.
ISIS is, in effect, running the immigration or refugee program for Italy right now because they decide who gets on the boat and goes across the Mediterranean seas. The original and classic Gang of 405. Saturday mornings, live, 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern, only on the 405media.com.
You're on the 405.
This is Mike from the Wrestling Mayhem Show, the show where we get fans and people in the wrestling industry together to talk about pro wrestling, WWE, NXT, WrestleMania, all kinds of fun. It's a podcast party. Check it out, Wrestling Mayhem Show, right here on the 405 Media.
Listen to the Wrestling Mayhem Show, now 7 nights a week, 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, right here on the 405media.com.
You're on the 405.
Welcome back for the final segment of the Tammy Jackson Show on the 405. I'm joined by guest Alliance Defending Freedom Legal Counsel, Christiana Holcomb. Christiana will be Eric Stanley's deputy on the Trinity Lutheran Church of Columbia, Inc. Now, I saw Pauli and Isaac Comer, both. I don't know which one it is, so I'll have to get corrected on that. It's known as the Playground case. It's the biggest case left on the SCOTUS docket. It'll be heard tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. So this is the news before it happens, having Christiana on here. Is it Pauli or is it Comer?
So it is now Comer, but it's only due to an administration change in January. So the director of the Department of Natural Resources was Ms. Pauli up until early January, and now it's Ms. Comer. So that's the reason for the confusion regarding the case name.
Okay, got it. I thought, no, wait a minute. I thought I did my research on this stuff.
Nope. You're not crazy.
good. Good to know. Some people might disagree with that, but oh well. There was a post at the ADF website, Christiana, and it describes the case. And there is this statement from ADF Senior Counsel David Cortman. The government should treat children's safety at religious schools the same as they do at non-religious schools, said Cortman. The government isn't being neutral when it treats religious organizations worse than everyone else. Equal treatment of a religious organization in a program that provides only secular benefits isn't a government endorsement of religion, but unequal treatment that singles out a preschool for exclusion simply because a church runs a school is clearly unconstitutional. Now, we talked about before the break what will happen. It starts at 10 a.m. How long do you expect it to take?
So we anticipate that each side have approximately 30 minutes to make their case to the court. Obviously, the justices do have the prerogative to hold the attorneys at counsel table a little bit longer to finish up any questioning to answer any lingering issues in their minds. But yeah, approximately the entirety of the argument we expect to last from 10 to 11 a.m.
Okay, very interesting. Boy, at times like this, I really wish it was televised. This would be more exciting than Perry Mason, I tell you.
It's a Super Bowl for lawyers, so yes, we're really excited.
Yes, anybody that I know that has had the honor of arguing before the Supreme Court, that's really something else. How long then after do you think that the High Court will deliberate? How long do they typically take before you get a ruling?
Yeah, well, your guess is about as good as mine. Generally speaking, the court will try to issue its opinions by the end of June when it goes into its summer recess. So hopefully we will have a decision on the case by that time. But again, it's at the court's leisure.
Wow. Now, Christiana Holcomb, I told you, I appreciate what you and everyone at Alliance Defending Freedom, ADF, does. You're working to defend our constitutionally guaranteed First Amendment and our religious liberty. Tell everybody a little bit more about Alliance Defending Freedom and what they do in the country.
Certainly, I'd be glad to. So Alliance Defending Freedom is the largest religious freedom organization in the world, actually. We work not only in the United States, but internationally as well. And we litigate in the areas of religious freedom, the sanctity of human life, and marriage and the family. And so we stand up for those who can't defend themselves, and we advocate for the freedom of people of all faiths to live and work consistently with their deeply held religious beliefs. And your listeners are more than welcome to learn more about the work that we do, the cases that we handle, meet some of our clients via our website, which is adflegal.org.
They weren't Alliance Defending Freedom at first. What were they initially called?
We were initially called Alliance Defense Fund.
Yes. Okay. That's right. It was different.
That was primarily because at the time we were helping to fund other attorneys. We didn't have our own in-house litigators who were actually handling cases. But we've since altered our model to help with the religious freedom needs of the country, and hence the name change.
Yes, and there is a big, big need for that. Now, I'm assuming ADF it is a nonprofit.
That's exactly right, yes. And the fantastic thing about ADF is everything that we do, everything that I do as a lawyer for my clients is free. We don't charge our clients anything at all. So it's a real privilege to be able to serve the body of Christ in that way.
That's fantastic. So this would mean that if people go to the website, if they appreciate what you do, if they would like and are able, I'm assuming that they can donate to ADF.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So if they feel so led, you can visit our website, adflegal.org, and there is a place there that'll kind of walk you through that process.
Very interesting. You probably don't know this, but I'm the executive editor at a site called barbwire.com, and it was founded by Matt Barber, who was a dean of law at Liberty University. And Matt and I are great friends, and of course he's good friends and works with Matt Staver, and I know Matt and Anita Staver as well. So I have a lot of friends in the community of lawyers that are believers and that are defending religious liberties around the nation. And it's kind of an exciting group of people to know, because we're at this time when a lot of stuff is coming under fire, and there's a big opportunity for people such as yourself, Christiana.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I mean, Alliance Defending Freedom is an alliance building organization. And so we work with other organizations across the country because, frankly, there's more than enough work out there for everyone. Our fundamental First Amendment freedoms are consistently under attack. And if we don't stand up for them and for, you know, the freedoms of the generations to come, then they won't be there to be enjoyed. And so we're just so grateful for the work of other organizations and like-minded organizations as well, like Liberty Council that you mentioned.
Yep. That's there is between ADF and Liberty Council and a number of other organizations. There's some great work being done by Christian lawyers. So you hear all these jokes about lawyers, and I say, well, wait a minute. there are some great lawyers out there that are doing what is supposed to be done with the law and justice. It's fantastic. Hey, I want to thank you so much, Christiana Holcomb, for taking the time, and I'll be thinking and praying about y'all tomorrow as you go before the U.S. Supreme Court with this case, and I hope it goes well.
Thank you so much for having me, Tammy. It's been my pleasure, and again, your listeners are welcome to visit playgroundcase.com to learn more about tomorrow's oral argument.
Fantastic. Take care, my friend.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Wow, it's been a quick hour, well, a little less than an hour, but on the show tonight, great guests. And next week, I'm going to be back with more great guests on the 405 Media. Until then, this is Tammy Jackson reminding you to wake up. Don't be silent. Let your voice be heard, because you know the answer. We have a country to save.
I cut my teeth on the back of an old church pew. I learned to walk in the ways of light and truth, and I was told not to speak till I was spoken to. I heard it preach what I should and I should not do, and the choir sang. Boy, no more. I've seen some things that a man just can't ignore. And this world's gonna see what I'm standing for. I've kept my peace, but I can't hold my tongue anymore. You can't buy my silence. You can't steal my voice. You can't keep me quiet. I will. Try to beat me down, tell me to shut my mouth. But there's a time to speak, and the time is now. Oh, 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 oh.
can't buy my silence. You can't steal my voice. You can't keep me quiet. I will bring the noise. Try to beat me down. Tell me to